Oh, crap. I almost died. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and children of all ages. Welcome back to the White Beard and TK podcast. I am one of your hosts, T. Anthony Bland. You also know me as White Beard. And if you watch us on YouTube, the White Beard and TK Experience, then you have seen my face, so you know who I am. Today, once again, I am flying this alone. I do have some ideas about that. But again, I want to welcome you back. For those of you who don't know, and it's the first time you're catching on to this, we are pretty much outdoor enthusiasts. Camping, hiking, backpacking, adventure travel. We have never been in a position to be able to do that full time, just part time. And since we've been down here for a year, we've moved to Tennessee a year ago, we have not been able to actually get a chance to go out and do that as much as we wanted to. So we just continue hiking. At any rate, I did have plan that TK would sit with me and we would do the whole thing, talk about her first job and a few other things. But this week, which is Thanksgiving week, yesterday was exactly Thanksgiving Friday, Thursday, things went a little sideways, and we actually just spent the whole week just resting. You would think, well, after listening to the last show, that, well, we just spent the weekend resting and get out of here and, you know, just taking a little vacation. But that was more of a mental break and a physical break. But it was more of a mental break. And as you know, that didn't go as planned. And so there really wasn't that much of a bit of a rest period. I can't recall if I shared this last week, what happened last week towards the end before we left. If not, I will get back into that momentarily. So this week's thought, I just wanted to sit down and just talk with you guys about, was having something to die for. Now, I know you're thinking, what do you mean something to die for? Shouldn't you be looking for something to live for? True. And you can take that both ways, you know, having something to die for, something that you really passionate about, that you would actually give your life for. But it's also that very same thing is a thing that you would fight because you have that very same thing to live for. And that's the main purpose, you know, having that one thing, having that thing that means that much to you, having the passion enough to want to live for that thing, to want to be alive for that thing, to make sure that you make it home at the end of the day, like many cops and people in the military. You know, you go out with your fellow soldiers or your fellow Marines or SEALs or Navy men or whatever they call themselves, whatever. And, you know, you're fighting for your brother or your sister right next to you. And the hope is to get back at the rest of that evening. Once you're back at the rest of the evening, well, the next thought is, well, you know what? When all this is over, when my tour duty is over, I need to make it home. And so you fight to survive for those things to happen. Let's see how I'm going to do this. Let's start with, in my life, since I was very, very, very young, I made a launch into this sometime down the pike, I have a couple of ideas I want to share with you guys. Since I was very, very young, I have been around death, so to speak, but had a few near-death experiences. And like everybody else who's gone before me and anybody else who's lived and died, eventually you won't live. And that's just a fact. It's a sad fact. It's a fact that we never want to face. It's a fact that we don't really think about. It's a fact that many, many young men and young women truly don't think about, and they live their lives haphazardly and their young lives and think they're going to live forever. And usually in your 20s, like you're going to live forever. When you're in your teens, you're just stupid. Then your 20s, you just live like, you know, well, I can live forever. And then all of a sudden, they get the big slap in the face and the wake-up call when they hit 29 and 30. Then 32 and 33 come. And then they realize, I'm old. I'm older. I'm getting older. I'm never going to be young again. I'm never going to be younger again. And then they get to be this age. But many of them have spent their time in their 20s being so foolish that they've done things that damage their bodies. They've done things that damage their health. They've done things that damage psychologically and mentally, emotionally, and spiritually themselves and their lives. And if they have children, they've also done the same things to them because of the stuff that they've done in their lives. And so, but my original point was, before I go down that rabbit hole, already down the trail anyway, was I've always been surrounded by and had that near-death thing. And, you know, I think what really, really started to trouble me was when my grandmother died. I may have been about 6 or 7 years old, somewhere around there, maybe even five, six, between 6 and 7. And during that time, I had a lot of the old guard, the older generation dying. And I was very young, going to a lot of funerals. And I could not sleep. Until this day, I still can't sleep. And I really, really think, if I trace it back, it goes back to that time. I remember one time when my grandmother died, I think people couldn't get up to the casket. I don't remember. I know it was just like really short, leaning on the pew or whatever that was in front of me when they spun the casket around. That's what it looked like to me. They may have just brung it over close so people could see. It terrified me. It terrified me to see this body in this box at an age where I didn't understand it, didn't understand what was going on and why this was happening. And then went on to the next funeral. And then the next funeral, I had like a grand aunt or something else like that. And at that funeral, an argument or a fight broke out. And someone was trying to put a bottle in a casket. And so these things terrified me my entire life. And I get a little bit older. We went to visit some friends in Brooklyn. Brooklyn has never been kind to me. Went to visit some friends in Brooklyn, a family friend. So my whole family went, and my sister and I walked into a store, and we walked into a middle of a robbery or something. I don't know exactly. You know, my memory is from way, way back then. And back then, I couldn't remember a lot except for that big black gun and that barrel pointing around at my face. And hearing my sister and feeling her grab me from the back and yank me out the store as the person turned the gun and was facing me. And we took off running. We left our friends, you know, my mom's best friend. She had some daughters. And so we went to visit him. We left him and we were gone. And I was probably around maybe 8 or 9 when that happened. And fast forward to me in my own life, I was just listening to this thing called the Bronx Borough-Wide Chorus. I was telling Hannah about this not too long ago, that I used to get up every morning, every Saturday morning. I've been singing for a while. I tried my hand at a few instruments, and it just didn't take with me. I had to trombone at one point, and that didn't work. I wanted to play drums, but the coordination for me didn't work the same way it never worked for me to play basketball. So I never learned how to play basketball. I learned how to play football much better. Baseball, I didn't like. So I was in a glee club and singing before it was, I knew it was called GLEE, Glee Club. I was in the glee club since before we moved to the Bronx, I think. I've always sung in schools and stuff. And later on, elementary schools and glee club when I graduated and went to, what do you call this? Junior high school. In 7th grade, my second 7th grade or 8th grade, what I, yes, I was left back both in 7th and the 3rd grade. I listened to my sister in the 7th grade, said, "Oh, you could do what you want, you get left back." That was a lie. So I didn't do any work. But I also had like a 3rd grade reading level in the 7th grade. So I was terrible at reading. But I was in the school chorus, and we had these two music teachers, totally different music teachers. Trust me, this is going to make sense in a moment. One was Mrs. Fish, and she looked like her name. That's all. She was a nice lady, but she looked like a fish. She had these big bottle cap glasses, and she would play the piano, more like bang on the piano. But she had skill to read and play it, and we sung some school songs and other songs that we had to learn and sing. And actually, I learned a lot of those things in 3rd grade, by the way, and all the way up into junior high school and maybe high school. What would be considered today patriotic songs, "America the Beautiful," which is one of my favorite songs, which I always thought should have been the national anthem. Somehow, when it was in battle, which one was going to win out, the knuckleheads chose the poem, the Star Spangled Banner. And "This land is your land, this land is my land." We sang a lot of those songs all the time when I was growing up. It's a travesty, just a stone cold shame that children not taught these things in school today. They're not taught to love their neighbor, their country, and to serve their country. It's a shame. So in 7th grade, I'm in school and I'm learning to sing, learn to do it more and more and more. By the time I get to like the 8th or 9th grade, we got a new teacher. I think he came from Harlem. His name was Mr. Lowe, Lowe. I think he spelled his name. And this was a strange dude. He was a big dude. I mean, like, he was tall and he was wide, fat dude or chubby dude. So he was like tall and wide. He wore a bow tie. He had big, big puffy cheeks. And one of the first things we did when he came to my junior high school was ask us what the school song was. And yes, if you're listening to this and you're familiar with that movie Lean on Me, it will sound a little bit like Mr. Carter. We had to learn the school song. But this is what he did differently, and this is how he taught us everything, Mr. Law. He wrote the song out. Then he erased the line. We sang the song, we read it from the wall, I mean off the board. We sang it like 3 times. It may have been 4. We sang it like 3 times reading the words. Then he would erase it, one line, and we had to sing it from memory. Then he erased the next line. We had to sing it from memory. He erased the next line. And then at one point, the whole entire board was blank. And we had to sing it. We had to keep learning it over and over and over by rote until we had that song in our minds. Well, we went from that to every song he ever taught us, he did the same way. So I had more of a classical training in music. And my instrument of choice was my voice. So somehow he picked me to be part of an ensemble. It's my first time being in an ensemble. The second time was when I was in a church choir and they pulled me out to be in an ensemble group of just 9 people or 6 voices sometime. And And I love that. I love that intimate part. I love the intimate group of singing then, as opposed to being in a large group, which was fine. I can sing in a large group. So he pulled me into the Emerald Society. And I sung with him. We sung all kinds of like beautiful song orchestrations that he liked. And I think he had a more of a classical training. And from there, he picked me to be, and probably him and Mrs. Lowe, they picked me to be in, to represent the Bronx in the borough-wide choir. Now, this meant there were students from all over the Bronx inside this choir. Now, I was recalling this the other day, and I said, it must have been like 200 people in that auditorium. But I was so fascinated. I was like, you know what? I had the album. We cut an album. And I think I was in the class of 77, 78. I was in that group. And I don't know what the album is. It ended up being in my mother's hands at some point, and I never had it. I record on a cassette tape, so I don't know where that's at. But a couple of years ago, I came across it on YouTube, so I was looking for it again this weekend. And just trying to listen to the voice and remember it. And when I looked at it, my old director is the one who posted it up on your first Facebook. And he said it was a 400 to 500 voice chorus. And it clicked to him like, yep, that auditorium really was full. So it was I was way off with just saying we had about 200 people. So I went from being in Glee Club, I moved on to the ensemble and also singing with the school. But with the ensemble, the Emerald Society, and then I was picked to represent my school in the Bronx Borough-Wide Choir. Now, when you lived in New York, we had the Borough-Wide Choir and we had the Citywide Chorus. I never made it to Citywide. By the time I got to high school, I started moving away from singing that way and just singing with my friends with the radio, you know, hanging around the block, singing to girls and everything else. And, you know, my whole idea was supposed to be like Teddy Pendergrass and just sing at a concert and have girls and just everything throw their numbers and clothes at me. It's probably why the Lord never let me be a singer, never let me be famous singer, because my heart was all about a whole different thing. So, and what we did was we met every single Saturday morning. I would get up sometimes with no breakfast, it didn't really matter. And I took, let me see, it took one bus to the next bus, and then the next bus was, I took maybe three buses, or you could take two buses and a train to get to the school, which was up in the Bainbridge area of the Bronx near 100 and, excuse me, near 205th Street, something like that. And then we walked all the way down to the school. And if you keep going down that way, you hit probably, I think, is Gun Hill Road. No. Webster Avenue, if somehow if you just keep going out and then you hit Gun Hill Road when you take another bus and that would take me home. So one weekend, and this is where I met became a really good friend of mine who actually started singing backup for Luther Vandross, the O'Brien family. I was in a class with one brother, Joseph. They live in a small building, and in small buildings in Edenwall Project was the crazy families. In the big families. And he was kind of a bully, but he sort of respected me and I respected him and I liked him because we knew each other from third grade. And so I caught up again with him in seventh grade. And then I met his brother in Borough-Wide, Peanut. I don't know his real name, but it was Peanut. And so Peanut was the one who later on went on to sing backup for Luther Vandross, my other buddy from school, who I caught up with when we got into high school, because he ended up at High School Art and Design with me, Sean Farrell. And Sean and I sung together. We met and became friends. Sean went on to sing with another group in the 80s. I forget the name of this group. Oh my God, they were singing like Nouveau Soul, sort of thing. It was. Encore, Inc. I forgot the name of the group. He sang a little bit with them. I later on caught him at a we ran into each other at a concert. It was New Edition. It was at a New Edition concert, and I saw him. He was like big, man. He was like buff. And he moved from all of that into becoming a Fed. He was with the FBI. So, but back to when we were all kids and just singing every Saturday, we went out and it was me and one of the O'Brien brothers. And we were walking and Hannah was talking about, Albanians, those crazy Albanians, stay away from the Albanians. And so we were laughing the other day. I'm like, yeah, well, you know what? When you start to get down lower on the food chain of people who are poor and poorer in each country, you gotta watch out because those are the mean people that'll be ready to beat you to death. And so I told her my run-in with a bunch of Albanians who used to live over there. And we went to class and we left and we're on our way home. And these group of the other kids, we were all kids, and they were following us. We couldn't figure out why they were following us. We were a bunch of black kids in a hugely white neighborhood in the 70s. I don't know. I'm not going to speculate. I'm just going to say this one thing. We go. And they corner us in a store. And clearly a fight was supposed to happen. So I'm banging on the store for the person to let us in the store. And they wouldn't let us in the store. So we're trapped in between the front store, where they would have the windows on the front store and then the outside on the street level. So it was picture like a hallway, a front hallway of your home. So the street was over here. And we were trapped between the street and the door. And on the sides of us were the display windows. So there was nowhere to go. There was only one way out, and they came to jump us. And so they started fighting, and there was pushing going on. And one of my friends said the dumbest thing, which was, did he say, Tyrone? I think he called me, T, hand me my 007. I'm like, what? We didn't have a knife. And I'm wanting to pull out a machete or some other long butcher knife and swung. And I was pressed up against the front door. And so the knife came down and caught my friend by the hood of his coat. We pushed by. I pushed out. We ran. I split. I don't know where anybody was. I was gone. I hit that corner, which was probably Webster Avenue, made a beeline. I saw a paint store, ran the paint store. The first thing I was thinking of, throw paint. Just grab a can and start throwing it. But I looked around the aisle, nobody was there, and I just ran home. I ran all the way home from the, and it was a long way from where I lived. I used to live up on a 229th Street, which if you're living, if you know anything about the Bronx, if you're on a train, that's one of the last stops before you get to 241st Street, I think it is. And then after that, it's Mount Vernon. So I ran from way over there up there anyway. So that was probably around the second time that I had that I almost died moment. So later on, I'm late in my teens, and now I'm hanging out with my cousin, hanging around there, and we get into a fight with this group called Ball Busters. It was a largely Dominican gang. I think they were Dominicans. I know there were a mix of Puerto Ricans there too. Up on 130 something street and Broadway, but they would sometimes come up to where we were. My aunt lived on 150th Street and Broadway between. And so I hung out on 149th, 150, 149th in, no, I'm sorry, 150, 51st, and around that area between Broadway and Riverside. And so I hung out and grew up around trees and looking at Jersey and smelling that. And all of us had these fantasies of what we wanted to do. And one day, one of my friends were walking and the gang comes out and we all get into a fight. We're down in Riverside. We're just running because this whole fight is breaking out. And one of the guys stabbed the person, not my close dear friend, but one somebody we knew from around the block, stabbed him with a screwdriver in his back. Thankfully, that idiot got locked up for that. There have been times when I can't confirm or deny, foolishly pulled the trigger shooting guns off of Riverside or something like that. I cannot confirm nor deny that. We've gotten into many fights with other blocks and things of that nature, which was insane. I get a little bit older, start moving to my 20s. I'm standing outside with my friend drinking a beer. We just got finished working. I know we're on our break, actually. And we were outside in front of a building, and a guy said, "Stop." And he said, "What?" And they start talking. The other one, he pulls out a gun. And we're both just standing here. Pulls out a gun and shoots the guy standing right in front of us. So basically, the bullet just shot straight across me from right to left. It hits him in the arm. Then he runs. He's chased him down the block shooting. Another one with my other friend. I'm now early 20s. And we're outside just talking. He went to go visit his girlfriend. We just come downstairs in front of the building. And a fight breaks out. And these two fools start shooting each other. I'm like, okay. And we took off running down the block. About 21, I'm in Job Corps at this point. When I get in there, we got these things we call flying tens, which was, the first 3 weeks you're there, you get a $10 stipend. We call it flying tens because the money flew in your hand and flew out. It literally did like that. By the time I brought some detergent to wash my clothes, or if it was a Friday and I was gonna wash my clothes, I went down a corner and got myself some Chinese food, which is usually beef fried rice, and I go and eat that. My money was spent by the weekend, so I really didn't have much left. I think this was past my 3rd week. So by that time, I think you get increments of like $21 and you got up to like the $30 stipend. I think the highest was maybe 40, I think. I can't remember. But I had just gotten paid. And this is when I got the higher pay. And we're supposed to go to a movie. And I was like, oh, man. So everybody wanted to go see one movie. I wanted to go see something else. They wanted to see Police Academy, something like that. And it's this girl we used to call Channel 11. Yes, we gave everybody a nickname. At that time, I was known as Hassan. We gave everybody a nickname. And we called her Channel 11. I forgot her name. It could have been Karen. Because she was so skinny. She had like these little skinny legs, and we called her Channel 11. But she wanted to go out and hang out. Nobody wanted to hang out with her. She wanted to hang out with me. I said, but I can't. I have a date. But when I come back. And so I did have a date. I met this girl, and so we went out. To this day, I regret that move. We went out. We went to see a movie. I don't even remember what we went to see. Maybe because of the trauma of that night is the reason why I don't remember. And we went to see a movie. We come back, and we cut through the park. Now, I usually did not cut through the park to get to University Avenue. I would usually walk straight up the block, cut around the block, and walk on the avenue. And we'll walk on the avenue so that the lights are there and you can see your surroundings. I learned a long time ago, sit with your back facing the door so you always see what's happening. So that's basically what I did. This night I went to go over through the hair because it was a dark park and we were gonna make out. So we're up against the school door and I'm kissing her. And all of a sudden, I saw somebody walk by me. And so I stopped. My first big mistake was I had my back to everything behind me. So I couldn't see anything going on behind me because she was up against the school door, so she can see behind me, see everything going on, but I can't see anything but her face, and I was just focusing on her. So I was not aware of anything, but I did hear some footsteps. And so, I'm kissing, kind of looked to the side. I wasn't paying attention to it anymore. And then I heard, "Yo, is this the one?" And I stopped kissing, like, what? The guy came, "Yo, this is the one. Yeah, it's the one right here." And he comes up the stairs before I can even turn around and puts the gun to the back of my head. I immediately totally forgot about she was there. And I just said, listen, I don't know who you are or what it is you want, but I'm not who you're looking for. Listen, I work right over here. Yo, shut up. Shut the F up, man. Shut up. Is this the one? Is this the one? Is this the one? Yeah, shoot. Yo, shoot him, man. Yo, shoot him. Yo, shoot him. Yo, shoot him. I'm like, shoot me for what? I don't even know who you are. And so I tried to turn around and say, stop. You don't turn around or something like that and push my head. And so the gun pressed up against the back of my head. And she's just standing there, I guess frantic or something else like that. And I was just like, tell her to be quiet. And the guy says, I should shoot you right now. I should just shoot you right now. Now, at this point, I'm calm as a cucumber talking, but my knees are knocking. Where was that? My knees were shaking, and the guy was like, give me some. I'm like, listen, I got some money right here. That's all I have. And he's still pushing the gun up my face. And the guy kept standing up, looking up in front of me. And to my, yo, just shoot him, just shoot him, just shoot him. And I really wanted to punch him in his face, but there was nothing else I could do. I just looked, I kind of looked at her, but not really looking at her. My legs are shaking and my heart is racing at this point. Now I'm a fear and just look up in the sky, just preparing for that moment. And I saw that there's big, beautiful, bright moon. I don't know, something in me at that moment was just like, nope, this ain't the day. And the guy, yo, take off your shoes. I'm like, what? Yo, we ain't gonna rob you, man. We ain't gonna rob you. We don't wanna steal your shoes. I'm sitting there going, you got a gun in my head, right? Thinking about this in hindsight, when all that happens, like, you got a gun in my head. Why in the world would you not just steal my shoes? We're talking about the era when people was robbing you on the train for your shoes. She had me take off my coat, threw my coat across somewhere and threw the sneakers the other place. And, then they just walked off. I think he took the money I had and then he just walked off. And I was just sitting there and now I started to shake when they were done. My voice is shaking and everything else. I just wanted to go. I just need to go. I just need to go. I just need to go. And I started to scramble. I walked down the steps with those shoes on. Then I found my shoes and I looked over and I found my, cause it was a faint light. It wasn't totally black. And I found my coat and put my jacket on and just started walking. I totally left her. I totally left her. I heard a voice faintly in the background. And then, so I was like, come on, let's just go. And so we got back to Job Corps. She went her way. I went my way. When you got in, we got patted down and they didn't find my bag of weed, the security guard, because I learned a trick, which was I put a hole in my pocket, a small hole in my pocket, and then I dug all the way in the back. So when I brought my bag of weed, because yes, then I was a degenerate, I would stick it all the way in the back. This is relevant for later on. So I go upstairs. I'm shaking. It's the weekend, so most people were gone. I stayed during the weekend. I loved the quiet. I didn't want to go home anyway, for many reasons. So I just stayed there. And I came down and I saw Channel 11 later on that night. So, how are you? I'm like, I'm okay. I'm okay. So, what's the matter? I'm like, nothing. I should have just went with you. And I just breezed by her and she went about her business. I didn't talk to her anymore that evening, and I just went to the park. I went to the handball park. I s probably smoked half a joint. I don't think I could do much of anything, and I was just shocked. And I went upstairs, and then that was it. It took a couple of days, but like the next day or two, I had to wait online to, and this is how I know how it affected me. I had to wait online to eat dinner, and someone came up from behind me and put their hand on me, and I flipped out and almost knocked the person out. So I couldn't stand people behind me, and that took a very, very long time. That reaction took a long time. I would step outside the line so nobody was behind me and do all the other things, and that's when I started to practice for the rest of my life, was from that particular day, said nobody could ever get a jump on me. Or me ever not being able to do that is sit with my back facing the door, or always watching, or being in a position in a room where I can watch everything, observe everything in the room, observe everything in an arena or in a movie theater, watching as exactly everything when I get in. This started way back then. I still had the reaction to people behind me. I still don't like people behind me now. I tell people all the time, don't get behind me. I don't like people's hands or anything else close to my face. No one's ever got that close to touch me except for my wife, Cheryl. That was the only, and then our baby, there's this one, Hannah, when she was little. Other than that, just didn't like anybody that close to me in proximity. It didn't matter who it was. So then that was then. Later on, some more things happened in my life when you get to that point, and it's like, oh my gosh, I've always been around this. These things always came, this stuff was happening to me. And so let's bring this up to recently. So I'm not just rattling on with this thought, but bring it to a point before we, you know, finish up today. Before we went away, I may have said it last week. I didn't actually listen to what I said in the last show again. But before we went away, I was saying, you know, I was going to work this day, work that day. I deliver. Excuse me. I'm a delivery driver. I left the office from the call center, and I've been doing this now for a little bit. Been trying to get a full week for a whole month, and I can't get a full week. It's just craziness that happens and goes on. And so I've been doing Instacart and Spark, but I've been doing Spark exclusively for like the past 3 weeks. From the beginning of November, the end of October to the beginning of November. I think it's the beginning of November. So I've just been doing them exclusively and haven't done Instacart at all. Although I love Instacart, it's kind of fun. I don't mind shopping. I like walking around and get my steps in, keep healthy. Spark, I'm sitting in the car all day. Then I get out like a postal guy dropping stuff off, but I don't get federal money. And so before we left, I said, well, I'm going to work this day, and I'm going to try to relax so we can go away and we'll have that hustle. I mean, hustle. Have that hecticness. I just want to calm down. So we get to the end of the week. It may have been that Thursday or Friday, because I believe I took off that Friday and didn't go to work at all. I think it was that Thursday. And I told Hannah, it's the first time I ever felt like a slave. I went into this place. I had to drop off. Now, Spark is real funky. They're trying to punish you when you say, you reject a couple of drop-offs, a couple of deliveries, and so somehow they recapture and send you these other places, right? So then, and before they start sending you to the choice places, or you get the real good one, because you know how everything works, right? With all the matrix and the metrics and the algorithms, just like on YouTube and even with the podcast, you know, if someone picks it up, you put the right word in there, the right wording, it'll be picked up, and there you go. Some people made famous for the dumbest daggone things. And every time you turn around, there's more of that coming out. And someone with some substance could be lost in all of that sauce. So, I ended up doing Sam's Club for like 2 days. And for like the beginning of the day, I wouldn't get anything. And I'd start at 8 in the morning and I wouldn't get anything to like 10 o'clock, which gave me a couple of days at one point in time for me to post on Instagram. So I didn't get anything. So I get a Sam's Club, but I'm like, okay, this is like a short run, $20, $30, I think it was. No, it may have been $20. And it's less than 20, actually, when I think about it. The tip made up the 20. I'm like, okay, fine. The thing I don't like about Sam's Club is that there's no bags. So you get like boxes, you got to put all the stuff around. So I go and I get it. And the young woman brings out some food. And then behind her, because the things say, and I didn't pay attention to it. Well, I did pay attention to it. It said like 50 pounds, 50, 60 pounds. I'm like, oh God. Who brought 6 chickens? You know, and this is what I'm thinking. Who brought this? Because, you know, it's Sam Club, right? You get these massive boxes of things. No, people. It was 5 to 6 reams. I don't think you call it reams. I think the reams are the things that's inside. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 boxes of paper. You know, like paper to go on the printer. And this is about 50, 60 pounds each. Now, I hadn't gone to the gym the entire week, so. And we didn't even hike that much in between or go out and do outdoors. So I'm looking at it going, what? And she said, yeah. I'm like, wait, hold the heck on. She said, okay, I'll come back for the card. I'm like, well, hold on. You need to put this in my car is what I'm thinking. And I'm like, listen, I'm not trying to injure myself, lift this up, because with my luck, like it's happened, like with the TV I talked about before, it's happened. Apartments around here, they don't believe in elevators. So you're walking up three to four flights of stairs. And so my luck, I'm going to have to lug this up somebody's daggone steps. It's like, these people don't understand. You know, I don't work for UPS. I'm not equipped with a dolly or a hand truck. I'm just a simple guy with a car. Thankfully, I didn't have to go up to an apartment. I did for another thing, but, you know, that wasn't so bad. It was like a box of food, and I dropped that off. So, I get to the place, and it's a construction company, and it's not a landscape, but whatever it was. It was this massive property, deep behind some woods, tucked away that nobody can see, and they owned all this property. You walk in, and they got like dynasty steps in the middle of the freaking office building that go all the way up. But a daggone chandelier. Yeah, the place was massive. So I get there, and the lady goes, oh, well, someone's out here, but you have a card? I'm like, no, I don't. So she brings something out for me. And then I get out there, and some people were coming in to do some business. Oh, I didn't know you were coming in. And they're doing a little chit-chat and everything else. And so I go and I grab the thing because I didn't really put it in. I grab it out and I felt it in my back going, like, shoot. And y'all know I was down for like the whole summer. So I put it on the car and I put it in there and I pulled and I dragged it and the stupid wheels didn't move. So I'm like really, really struggling like a mule to pull this thing up that was moving like I was moving through mud and molasses at the same time. You know, slippery, and yet it didn't move. My hands were very slippery on a pole I was pulling it on the thing she gave me. But then it's just dragging through this mud. So I get through the door and she says, just bring it around here to the other room. I'm like, what? So I got to keep going. The guy holds the door for me. So I get there, I take it outside. I'm so busy focusing, I didn't take the picture. So I just put it over there. I'm like, what? So I'm like, man, the first thing I thought in my head was, you know what? I'll clean it up for you. Negro, pick up that hay. Bail it. And then that's what I was just thinking. So I'm looking at this, I'm like, man, shoot. So I lift it up. And I take it because I can't bring the cart into the room. So I have to take it from the hallway where I was, walk it all the way into their like a kitchen area and put it in there. So I stack all 5 of them. I take my pitch and I go back outside. And my back is hurting, but I'm like, I'm okay. So I go and do the other stuff. So I text Hannah later on. And so she saw. And so I told what the lady said. So her answer was, and you told her, no, I'm not going to move it. I said, do you like to eat food? I have to do that. And so I put it down. I texted. I was like, no, I had to do it. You know, that's what I was there for. My job was to deliver. That was what I took on. So I did it. And that was the end of that. And then we went away for the weekend. And my knees were more sore than my back was that particular weekend. So we went away. Then we come back this weekend. And so we come back this week. And we know that Thanksgiving is coming up, so we're getting all prepared for that. Actually, we really wasn't preparing for nothing. Usually at the beginning of the week on Saturday or Sunday, I start cooking up a big focus meal for the week that we can take for lunch. This week was supposed to be soup. But I knew Thanksgiving was coming, so I said, well, I'll work half a day Monday, work Tuesday and Wednesday. And then I'm not going to work on Thursday, Thanksgiving. And then I'll go work on Friday. But then I said, let's go hike on Friday And I'll take off because she was going to take off 2 days. So Monday rolls around. I take the car out. I get a large drop, 14. I'm like, no problem. Now, since I've done this, I've had to go up massive hills that was like vertical. It was like going up K2, straight up. And some of these people have houses that are like mansion size up that hill, and then you got to walk throughout the driveway unless you drive up there. But a lot of times I can't turn a car around in a driveway, so I just leave it. I've gone into like back country on the back roads up into places where people was like, I don't know who got the gun, who got the shotgun. So, and I've delivered things. I have driven on very small roads where, and it's happened a number of times where I almost went off the road, which would not have been a ditch. It would have been off the mountain cliff. And I would tell him, like, I almost died today. I almost died today. It almost becomes a running joke. So this particular day, I start out in one of the first ones I had to go to was somewhere, and I rode around for so long, and I get like one or two every trip. I rode around, and the house I was looking for was on the corner, and I wasted like 20 to 30 minutes trying to find this house. So I drop it off, and then I go inside, and I see the people that I drop it off, or something like that. I think this is the same day. And the guy's, come on in. He's in a wheelchair with one leg, and his wife's in the kitchen making biscuits. No, she's making muffins, banana muffins. I was like, I recognize the ingredients. I'm like, she's making banana pancakes. It's muffins. So I come out and I text Hannah, I just went zone. And you went in the house? I'm like, yeah. The guy said, come on in. Anyway, so I get on my way. I think this is the same day. If not, it doesn't matter. This is the point. And the thought for today. This was the payoff of why you're here. I drive to this place and I'm looking for this woman's stuff who I had to drop off. And it was one of those fragile things. I think she brought a Pyrex. I knew it because I was like, where was this one? Oh, yeah, I put it inside the ice box, inside the box, the chest, the ice chest. So I go by. And your house is on the right. Oh, okay, there it is. So I moved up and I moved back a little bit in front of the house. Then I get out and I go to open the back and the hatch doesn't open. I'm like, what the heck, man? I know I just changed the battery. So I go back in and press the button. It doesn't work. I go back out, try it manually again. It doesn't work. So I go back into the house. Now I'm up on a hill, by the way. Like Tennessee is all hills. Some are worse than others. And so I'm up on this hill. And oh, so I go back and I try to check and it doesn't work. I'm like, okay, fine. Let me turn off the car and start it again. So I turn the car off. And as soon as I do that, I go to press the button and the car starts moving. Like, what's going on? So I try to press the button. I can't go to the back. I look and the car's pushing me now. So now I'm trying to tell you I'm on a hill. And I'm turning around and I turn and try to hold the car and it picks up speed and hits me in my left shoulder, which has already got a bunch of arthritic pain and problems with my bone here. And so it hits and I try to hold the car like Superman, right? You can't hold a car. So the door is still open because I was about to get, I was opening the door to lean in. So the door is open. So the door is hitting me and is holding me. So I'm getting dragged down this hill backwards. Well, not backwards. The car is going backwards. I'm getting dragged down the hill. I'm hanging onto the car, trying to keep my feet steady, but it's picking up pace. So I can't really stop. And so I'm moving faster and faster down the hill. I see a pole behind me. So the only thing I can think of. It's like they do in the movies, which I told Hannah later on doesn't happen. Jump in the car and start the car, hit the brake. That doesn't happen. It's physically impossible to do. And if you've ever done that and you could do it, God bless you and He had protected you. So the only thing I could do was I spotted a pole. And so I start turning the wheel and hoping that this is going to work because I can no longer keep up pace with the car. I'm actually getting dragged. And we all know I fell hiking this year and went face first. God, thankfully, I was fine. I kind of turned the wheel as I'm studying, and it was. If that didn't work, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. That's how fast it was picking up pace, and that's how bad it was. And so my feet are squeaking, and so I turn the thing, and then by the time I get there, it was moving too fast. The only thing I could think of was just let the car go. And thankfully, I didn't have to do it, although I did a little bit. As soon as I had it aimed at the pole, I just moved out the way before I got taken down the hill. And it hit the pole with bang, and it skid up on the pole and stopped. So I got the car, and I'm just sitting there going, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap. So I get in, try to turn on the car because apparently it was off. And I remembered, all right, I turned it off. So I tried to start it, it wouldn't start. I'm like, shoot. I tried to start it again. I tried to do some other things. I stepped on the pedal, stepped on the pedal, wouldn't work. I smelled gas, tried it again. And then finally, the car kicked over. And I'm trying to get it to move, but I said, let me go and check and see the back before I do something. So I checked the back. I didn't really see much. I wasn't really paying attention to where it was at the pole. So I get back in the car to try to get it to move. I said, before I do anything, so I start calling the cops. I don't know what to do. I don't know if I have to pay for the pole or something else. So I call the police. I text Hannah and said 911 had an accident. She's asking me what happened, and I call the cops. I text her quickly then call the cops. Now, while this is going on, the neighbor or whoever it was whose house I was in front of comes out of the house. And for some strange reason, I don't understand why he said this or what the meaning of this was supposed to be. If it was some sort of coded thing. Again, you people know I don't walk in my color bag, so he could have been trying to insult my little black behind, and it went over my head. I just thought of, you're a butthole. He comes out, get off my yard, get off my lawn. I'm like, what? Get off my lawn. I said, you see, I'm trying to. There's something here. I'm talking to the cop on the phone. I didn't have the police on the phone, 911 or op. All right. And he's like, get off my lawn. There's a whole parking space over there. That's what that's for over there. Get off my lawn. Move your car. Move your car. I'm like, okay, whatever. You see me on the, talking on the thing. And then he comes out of his face and that's honky talk. And walked off. I'm going to go, what? Here we go. Another one of these idiots who, for some reason in their own mind, alleging their own mind, think that, and there's a lot of men who do this and women too, a lot of men who do this. You decide to mouth off with someone whom you don't know. Thinking that you're the toughest person on the block. The man didn't know me from Adam. I was a little bit younger than him. He's not that much older than me. I could have shot him in his face. But he felt the need to say what he wanted to say and then come out and say some other nonsense to me. And I'm just sitting there going, what? I'm like, I just blew him off and was like, talk to the cop. I'm like, you hear him, right? And so the person, and now I'm beginning to shake. Very, very shaking. And then Hannah called me or I called her. I don't remember. And I asked him how long it was going to be. So they asked what my car was like and so on and so on. So the cop shows up. And I'm in one of those neighborhoods where, you know, if this guy's a neighbor, what is anybody else going to be like? So I later on got angry with him and at the whole situation. But when a cop does come and he was talking about the car, he said, well, I don't smell any gas. Why don't you move up over here? And so I pull up the car and pull in front of the lady's house. And we checked to see everything was fine, but my bumper's kind of messed up now. I need to get that fixed. I don't know when it's going to get fixed. I just got my letter for leaf, not leaf, lift in the mail, you know, a little patch you put in your window. And so I'm like, I can't drive with the bumper messed up. But I call her and she's like, are you okay? Are you okay? And I know she can hear me. I'm like really upset right now and, you know, trying to fight back the tears and everything else. Because as I'm sitting there, after the cop left and everything else, add all these flashes, this could have gone 10, 15, 20, 100 different ways. The puddle jumper could have kept going. Had I not found the pole and I was still hanging onto the car, that door would have knocked me over and I would have gotten run over by the car. I could have hit my face, broke something. I could have just been killed, period. After that, it could have hit another car and damaged somebody else's car. It could have kept going right down the block into that cross street and caused another accident. 15 different ways that this thing could have gone a heck of a lot worse. But by the grace of God Almighty and thanks to Jesus, I live to tell this story. And none of that happened. So I sat in the car for a little bit, try to gather myself. I got up, went to the lady's house. I was still parked in front of her house while I moved the car back up there. And where the police officer and I was talking, he was talking. We talked a little bit. He said, this was funny though. He said, I want you to go up there and put the car in park, or, you know, turn the car off. Or put it in neutral. Let's see if it rolls back. I want to see if you have a mechanical issue. He said, but step on the brakes before you hit my car. And we both just started laughing. And so we got there. And then the first thing he said to me, I step out the car. He said, I got those very same boots. I love them. They're right in my house right now. Find out. He's an avid hiker, backpacker. And he does, I think, fishing and some other stuff. So we were talking a little bit. That's how I know this. His parents are from upstate New York. And we were done. He was telling me what I ought to do about the reporting and everything else. I'm not going to say that here. And he shook my hand. Nice, big, firm shake, shaking a hand. And we, you know, kind of blessed each other along our way. And we went off. Thank you, Lord, and bless that officer for being so helpful and being so kind. And not at all with his hand on his gun or anything else. And he just, we just sat there. And it was a very pleasant exchange. He's gone. I go in the back. I look down at the car, make sure every gear is where it is. And I drop off the lady's thing and I sit back and I slide the bar for the next delivery. In between this, I'm talking to Hannah at one point. So I sit in the car and now a flood of all those things. And like I said, the 10 different ways this could have gone wrong. And either way, I wouldn't have made it home. Either way, I wouldn't have made it back to Hannah. Either way, she would have lost two parents before she was a full-grown adult. Either way, I could have been in a hospital. There was no way for her to get to me. The car was with me. She was far too away from me. I think I was like two counties away, like 30 miles away from where we are right now. I wouldn't have been able to get to her. It could have all been a mess. I could have indirectly killed somebody had they been coming by the car, would have went, and I'm just falling apart now. I can't keep it together. The tears are starting to roll. I'm trying to fight, and I can't keep it together. I drop off the lady's stuff. I sit in the car. I'm taking a deep breath, trying to go, trying to control myself. And then so we're talking on the phone, and I just want to go home. I just want to go home. So she's telling me, well, you got to, well, just go home. Just after, I'm like, I can't. And I can't because I have a responsibility. We spoke about that when I got home. I can't because I have a responsibility. These people's things were inside my car, and I needed to pull myself together to make sure that I finished the job that I set out to do, which is to get their stuff. I didn't have a time to fall apart. I didn't have a time to be destroyed. I had only one thing to do. Get those packages delivered. And that's what I did. And I drove down some crazy, windy streets. And everywhere I went, every time I stopped, the emotions would take over me and a whole bunch of other things. All I could think of was, I almost didn't make it home. And this could have went this way. This could have went that way. But by the grace of God, I finished everything and I texted her. And so she was like, you know, like later on, like, how's it going? Anything else? I just finished. I'm a caller today. I'm going home. So I didn't take any more deliveries that day. My day was short. That was Monday. After that, later on, my shoulder was hurting. Like, why is my shoulder hurting? And then I remember when a car, the initial thing as I was trying to turn around, I'm facing the car, so the door is like on my left. How this ended was with my back to the door, me hanging onto the roof of the car, trying to slow it down and trying to stop going down a hill. Before I had my back to the door, I was still had my hand in the car trying to turn the thing, but when I turned around, the car moved and it picked up speed and slammed into my shoulder. And so I'm trying to hold it. So later on Tuesday, I started having back pain. I'm like, why? And I remembered I was holding back the car. So I had the lower back pain, the same pain I had during the summer when I fell. No, when I injured my back hiking. So I'm like, I can't take another week off. I can't be down for another month or something else like that. And so I spent the rest of this week resting. By Wednesday, it was really, really bad. I could barely walk, but I said, let me run to the store and get some things that we needed. I saw a pie that I wanted, so we brought the pie. And I came home, and on Thursday, we basically stayed in the bed all day and then got up late and watched TV and just ate some food. We had the soup that I made. And then by today, Friday, I woke up feeling fine. And, by God's grace, I'm feeling better. Now, I know you're wondering and thinking, well, is this the thing you meant about having something to die for? No. What? Let me tell it this way. Some years ago, I was talking to my oldest son, and I was talking about being single and something else like that. And I said, it sounds real fun when you're a teenager, you do something else like this. And I think of those knuckleheads like Andrew Tate, who was poisoning the minds of young boys and young men. I said, being single and doing all those different things sounds real good until you get to an age when you're older and you don't have to be 40 and 50 years old. I'm just saying when you're an older adult and you get sick and you're in the hospital by yourself. There's no one coming to visit because you don't have a wife. You don't have any children. You don't have anything to live for. You have nothing. Then you begin to see just how lonely life is and how empty life is. And I think he was listening. He said something else, but I said, do you understand that it sounds real nice until you get to that point? When you get to that point, what will you have? And I know quite a few adult, some women and some men who have lived their entire life, maybe not married, some not married, some have, and no children. But the large majority of the type of people I'm talking about never been married, don't have children, don't have anything else, and they're quite old now. And they're alone when they go to the doctor. They don't have that. They don't have anything. And it's a lonely experience and it's not a good feeling. And many regret it at this stage in their lives. But it's a little too late. And so that's what I meant about, having something to die for is the same thing as having something to live for. Not the same thing, but you understood what I said from the beginning. And let me loop this in so I can close it out for you guys. Is that it's pretty darn empty. My first thoughts were, I got to get home to my daughter. Before her was my wife. I got to make it home to my wife, who I love, and to my six kids. I did everything and anything possible to do that. I've never been one of those young boys or young man who would sit there and let someone say something to me without me saying something back or ready to defend myself. But I realized as I got older, I can't be too quick to do that. I have to rely more on the other things I used to do when I was very, very young, which was my wit and my intelligence. To make sure that I can get out of something without a physical altercation, something that would prevent me from getting back home to my beautiful wife who was waiting for me, my bride, my sister, my friend, and my 6 kids. As they got older, and, you know, I'm out there in the world and I'm traveling on the train and we're praying for one another. It was always, no matter what the heck happened at the job or so-and-so, my main goal was to get home to my sanctuary, which was my apartment and my wife. And now that it's just me and this one, I fight every day that when I am done, because what I do is dangerous. It's not just dropping off the packages, but I'm driving on roads. We're out here. Let me put it to you like this. I don't expect this to happen in the daytime, but it could. We're out here, and anybody who lives outside of New York who's listening to this, you understand this. Anybody who lives outside of a city, you understand this. Anybody who lives in small towns or rural towns, you understand this completely. We are dependent on our cars. So when folks go to the bar, they're getting back in their car to drive home. So it's pretty common to be on the road with people who've already been drinking. Some a little more than they should be, and they should not be behind the wheel. So it's dangerous for that. I'm on the road and I compete with numerous amount of trucks. So it's dangerous for that reason. It's dangerous that you could be in a neighborhood with a nosy neighbor or somebody else, like 1 week someone called the cops because I guess they thought I was trying to rob somebody. And, you know, it's like, wow, really? I'm dropping off a package. Look how I'm dressed. Look what I'm wearing. Do I look like I'm going to come out here and rob someone wearing bright red or wearing this beautiful hat and my clean clothes? I'm clean cut, smelling good, looking good. My beard's tight and all this other stuff. And I'm going to come to rob you looking like this. That would give you a great description for the police. I'm not even 20 years old. You see all this white hair? I can't hide this. So there are many different things. But at the end of the day, my point was, having something to live for. The very same thing you're willing to die for, but it's that very same thing that you are willing to do whatever you need to do to live. Because at the end of the day, that's what you're doing. And that's what I needed to do. And that day, I almost didn't make it home. Find you something. Find you someone. If you have it. And for any of you young men out there, listen to people like Andrew Tate or somebody. You know what I just discovered about Andrew Tate? I pretty much wrapped up what I had to say to you guys. In closing, let me say this. I was looking at something and I saw some video of him about 2 or 3 years ago. And he had a full head of hair. And he's bald. I said, this has always disturbed me. Why is he bald? And so I looked up, you know, when did he lose his hair? And then I saw a little article that happened at the beginning of this year when the cops came to get him to arrest him for his issues. So the internet went wild when they found out that he was balding. Because when the cops came to get him, you could see the patches of his male pattern baldness on the top of his dome. Now, the thing was that he had told people that he's bald voluntarily. You know, he cut his own hair. But I'm sitting there going, no, that's not it. This dude was lying, as people were saying, the internet was saying he was lying. I'm like, so what else has he been lying about to these young men? What else is he always, he's willing to lie and do things and get people to do all these different things? It's just insane. These are not the people to listen to. These are not the people who tell you how to treat a girl like this and that and the other. And we were watching a movie the other night, and the guy said, I don't take marriage advice from someone who's single. Exactly. taking advice and listening to people who have not lived life, people who don't have these children, people don't have anything in the world to live for. And their advice is just to be, you know, especially in the internet world, you know, influencers. Yeah, okay, what are you influencing? Anyway, so that was my thought about, you know, having that thing in your life that you're willing to live for. When my wife died, I've mentioned this before, my wife died, when Cheryl died, I didn't want to live at all. It took maybe about 8 months for me to realize and to actually look at this 13-year-old daughter I had, who I had to take to school and I had to go to, but I couldn't really focus her in the first 3 months because my job had me running around. I was like, okay, let me order some food and have it delivered. Let me do this other stuff. And I didn't want to live. I almost drunk myself to death the first couple of months. And then I realized I didn't want her to lose both her parents before she was, you know, 18. So I had to pick myself up off the ground and live because I had something to live for. I had a child that I had to bring to adulthood and a child that needed me. And I had to fight darn hard to stay alive to be able to do that. Find you that thing. And if you have that thing, make sure that you continue to cherish and fight for it, that you make it home at the end of the day. That person cut you off at the store or cursed you out or so-and-so, be like, okay, well, fine. You know what? I'm not going to let you take up rent in my head or in my emotions because I have a goal. And my goal is to return home and to return home as many times as I possibly can before the Lord calls me home to be with him. That is all I have for you this week. That is my thought for this week. I was going to do something else added in here, but I'm going to save that for another time. I think I say this to you all the time, but I do have my wheels turning and I write down notes and forget them. So that's it. Is there something that you have that you fight for every day? Are you grateful that you even have that in your life? This is why we pray for those people. And this is why we pray for ourselves and we ask God for protection. I'm going to go. This ran over an hour. I'm going to go and I'm hoping that you guys will have a blessed week. And remember that you and I are neighbors, love one another as Jesus has said. Do that. And to my fellow believers, what was said after that? Then the world would know that you are my disciples, that you are my followers. Then the world would know by the way we love one another and how we love our neighbors. Until next time, God bless you.